Zim zim zada bim.
Oh God.
I'm making vines attack you now. That's Haji's magic spell.
Welcome once again, of course, to Hyperspace Broadcast, a podcast where we discuss our memories of a specific Toonami program before watching it and trying to determine if it's worth revisiting or best left in the past. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And this week we're talking about Johnny Quest versus the Cyber Insects. Dawn now, of Justice?
Yeah, V Cyber Insects. Dawn of Justice. It's a court case.
It's a battle of ideals, not a battle of physicality.
And you find out at the end that the cyber insect's mother was also named Martha. Good jokes. I'm actually a cyber insect specialist, so I'm here to take any questions you have considering this pre-watch. I have not seen
here's
this.
A question.
I don't know how they portray the cyber insects in this, but I can kind of help you out.
Okay, so here's my first question about the cyber insects. What size are they? Are they like giant or are they small?
Well, you see, cyber insects are very big for insects, but small for people. So I would say they're about the size of a dog.
Okay, sure. I guess my second question is, does this have any relation to the X-Files episode War of the Coprophages, in which there are robotic cockroaches?
My publicist told you not to bring that shit up. Are we clear? Am I correct?
Okay, you know what? I apologize. You're correct. I spoke to your publicist beforehand. There's been a real divide between us since the last week. For some reason, I feel like we're getting into these legal battles over who owns the rights to this podcast that very few people listen to. I just want to bring it back, man. I want to bring it back to the old school feeling.
This fucking cyber insect shit is tearing us apart. I just,
yeah, it's, you
just
know,
talk about Toonami again.
Yeah. Well,
I've never
we're
seen
going
this
to talk
movie.
About Toonami. Neither have I.
I don't
know almost anything about it. Well, I know a few things about it. So one can expect that there is some combat against cyber insects in it. I think that's safe to say.
I don't know. I remember the only thing I know of this as a kid, when I heard about this as a kid, it was like, well, I'm kind of done with the Real Adventures of Johnny Quest when this aired on Toonami, as I recall, at least. Maybe they re-aired it or something. And when they start airing it, and they're like, Johnny Quest versus the Cyber Insects. I was just like, nah, it's lame. That's it. That's all I have.
Yeah, I think my real question about this is whether or not there's going to be CGI. Because, of course, The Real Adventures of Johnny Quest had the whole cyberspace element, and as a result had sub-reboot levels of CGI employed.
Which I thought, of course, back then, that CGI could not get better. Like, I thought it was so good seeing the opening of that, of Real Adventures of Johnny Quest, where you're going through this, like, black and green tube, basically. That's
you know, I will... I
thought it was awesome.
I think that will probably still look pretty good, frankly.
It's
because that's
okay.
Mostly like 2D animation, animated 3D from what I recall.
Yeah.
Not the like 3D animation that looks like, again, sub-reboot. You want to talk about that Mortal Kombat VHS? I feel like that's actually like...
Oh, you know what? Yeah. Yeah, I got this Mortal Kombat VHS tape that was like an animated Mortal Kombat like little movie, basically.
Yeah, of course, from the times that we would go to Goodwill and buy random VHS tapes in the hopes that they would somehow be gold.
VHS spelunking.
Essentially.
A classic and fun hobby that I recommend to anyone. We found that. That was a classic. It would cut between really poorly animated parts where it's just like basically a 90s Saturday morning cartoon of Mortal Kombat. So not very bloody, and characters just being dumb, making quips. It's kind of like a PG version of the PG-13 movie.
Yeah, I guess. And also, you know, classic reusing the same shots of animation of Sonya Blade, like, spin-kicking a Baraka, for example.
They do it over and over again. They fight, like, 1,000 Barakas at once at one point, and they just keep showing the same stupid animation of Barakas running, and then of them being hit by these same attacks by Johnny Cage
and Liu Kang and Sonya Blade.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And it would cut between that and these, for some reason, cut into complete CG fight scenes that were fucking terrible. Like, they were
look very bad.
Yeah, they were like reboot quality.
Yeah, I'm gonna see if I can. I'm gonna see if I can find some clips of that.
That'd be good
show.
To bring up, because that is.
Because explaining it really does not do justice how atrocious it looks. I mean, we're going to be watching Reboot next week. Reboot looks better by a wide, 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 wide margin.
And that's saying something.
Yes, it is. But I guess some other information about this movie, actually, before we get into, you know, the break and actually go ahead and watch it. It's interesting because I noticed while doing some preliminary research that it features Jeffrey Tambor as the voice of Dr. Zinn, which, of course, I know him best from Arrested Development. He's also one of the leads in Transparent, which I haven't watched. Yeah. But he is great, obviously, and I'm hoping that it's just his voice, but I'm sure that it's not, because Dr. Zinn... My limited understanding is that he's essentially just Fu Manchu, like, kind of racist.
I'm excited to see the obvious comparisons between Venture Brothers, a show I like very much, and it's very much at its base.
Like
a joke ripoff of, or a parody. A joke ripoff, aka a parody of Johnny Quest.
A joke ripoff.
And a bunch of other stuff, of course. They add on.
Yeah, right.
I'm down to see that. There's that'll be interesting.
Right. Yeah, and I'm excited to see if Dr. Zinn is recognizably Jeffrey Tambor, or if he is like Bryan Cranston as the character Snizzard from Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, who is apparently voiced by Bryan Cranston, but you can't tell obviously because he's a
Bryan
talented
Cranston,
actor.
As in Walter White. Played a fucking villain in a suit in Power Rangers, or the voice of a villain.
He did not play of the villain.
That was a Japanese man from like 30 years ago. He did the voiceover
more
in
than
English.
30 probably, but
by now,
yeah, it's
probably
totally 30 years ago would be what 87.
Yeah, that's probably when it came out. That's a good place to just stop all momentum.
Yeah, sure. At any rate, this also introduces apparently Jesse Bannon, who is Race Bannon's daughter. Mm-hmm. And according to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution in their review, quote, no icky girl, end quote. So I guess that she doesn't have cooties and she's like a badass girl who kicks people's asses or something. I'm excited to see how that's handled. And by excited, I mean slightly fearful.
Maybe she's like Barbara Gordon.
Yeah, probably. And what I'm really hoping for is some weird, like, sexual tension between preteens. Between her and Johnny, probably. And
I'm really hoping for some sexual tension between preteens.
Okay, I'm not trying to sexualize it. I'm just I like her. And, you know, like, hey, Arnold... Whatever the girl that
like
Arnold
her?
Had a crush on. Yeah, right.
Like
that level of, you know, juvenile romantic interaction. That's what I'm excited to see.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just thinking Helga, and it's like, duh, I know Helga. What was the name?
Yeah,
it was a name that... the name was worked into a pun for getting rid of her, I remember, by Helga. That's really difficult, but... Ruthless.
Sure.
That's right. Her name is Ruth. She's
sure.
Do Operation Ruthless, or she's gonna like.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right. Shows hey, Arnold. Better. That was
apparently
a good show.
My dogs are being attacked by cyber insects this whole episode. So sorry about
that. Oh, cool.
But,
good.
That's, you know, it happens when you're a cyber insect specialist. Sometimes your dogs just see them start freaking out.
Yeah, it happens every once in a while.
Yeah, yeah.
At any rate, I think that that's about all I can even say about Johnny Quest versus the Cyber Insects prior to seeing it. I am
and it's
excited,
separate.
I guess.
Yeah, and it's separate from Real Adventures. It's before that
came
out, so that's why we're not sure if there's CG or not.
I think it actually came out after. I'll have to double check that, and I'll clarify, I guess, when we come back from the break.
Sure.
But my understanding is it came out after, but it's animated in more like the 60s traditional style. So the characters are still, you know, preteen, like children instead of teenagers, which will probably be more annoying. I don't like kids in shows or in real life, apparently. Just not a...
Just a bunch of Yulies.
Yeah.
Woohoo! Smoking!
If only they were all as useless as Yuli.
If only they were all voice acted by the same person and said the same dumb lines at the same time.
Yeah, I guess.
Literally just four times over. Yahoo! Smoker!
Yeah, like a Village of the Damned situation, but in this
Children
show.
Children of the Corn, but they're all Yuli.
Yeah. At any rate, let's get to our break. Let's watch this and suffer through it. Let's pop that fucker in. Let's give it a watch. That's what we usually say.
A watch.
The winds in your immediate area are dying down for the moment. If you don't lift off at once, you will lose your launch window.
Roger. Initiating launch sequence now.
Hey, welcome to The Break. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
You know, now that I think about it, we don't need to introduce ourselves for this part, but... Oh well, we've already started. So, as usual, we are here to tell you about some other ways you can help support the podcast. Peter, do you want to take that particular list?
Yeah, sure. You can subscribe on Blueberry, iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn to let us know that you're listening. Also, feel free to interact with us on our Twitter, at HBPod, or Facebook page, facebook.com/HBPod. And I can say with fair certainty that we'll respond.
Yeah, I really don't have much better to do with my time. I guess I can't speak for you.
No, I don't either.
All right, great. So if you feel like sending us a, I don't know, random screenshot, we will send a random screenshot back, or thumbs up, or a combination of both of those particular concepts.
Oh, we'll block you. Hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, I guess there is a possibility that could happen if you send us some kind of repeated abuse. Although, I don't know. I can be a bit of a masochist, so maybe I'll just obsess over it. That might have come out weird. The next episode will be up on May 31st, and that will be the first episode of Reboot, which we're pretty excited about.
Beep, beep, Reboot. You remember
beep,
they did
beep,
that?
Reboot. Is that a thing?
Yeah, dude. They would
I don't remember that
double
at all.
Click, they double click on the badge on their breast and say reboot, and then they... I don't remember what it did, really, but they they rebooted.
They're reset they to that. Factory standard or something.
Yeah. They would go into games, and they would reboot, and it would do something. Or they'd hit that and say reboot. Whatever, fine.
We'll
figure it out.
Yeah, we'll see, I'm sure. Anyway, that'll be up on May 31st, and we'll be back to Johnny Quest versus the Cyber Insects in just a moment.
Why so glum, friends? The paralyzing venom of my hymenoptoids will wear off in less than an hour. Of course, by then, it will be much, much too late.
And we're back. So, Peter...
Welcome back.
Quick question, as an expert in cyber insects, as you revealed at the start of this episode, how do you feel like cyber insects were represented in this movie? Do you think it was a good representation or kind of bad?
Certainly there's a very diverse collection of cyber insects shown in this film. I will say the powers were shown adequately. We've got even like the assassinoid in there. Just real real impressive stuff. But there's a lot of violence against cyber insects in this film.
Yeah, no, just, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's like, you know, sure, violent themes make sense, but when representation comes in and like all you're seeing of these cyber insects is they're getting blown limb from limb, it's like, I don't know, man. It just makes me feel weird.
Sure. I realize now that this is kind of mocking something I believe in.
Now we're just like, mocking representation of minorities in TV shows. Like, is that what I want to be doing right now?
No, not at all.
Not really.
Let's not do that. Let's avoid that because that's contrary to our beliefs. Okay. So, digging ourselves out of that particular hole, this movie existed and we watched it and... Hoo boy, I think is safe to say, in reaction to it. The plot is pretty...
In reaction to it.
Yeah, the plot is pretty pretty straightforward for the most part. Sure. As you said, as we were talking in like the pre-discussion. Essentially, you know, it starts with some pretty classic Johnny Quest stuff, Johnny and Haji racing through a jungle. If you're not familiar with Johnny Quest, Johnny is a blonde kid in a black sweater, and Haji is, I assume, an Indian kid. Who does magic, of course. So that's fun.
Yeah, definitely. And definitely the original, like... show is fairly just kind of casually racist
sure
portrayals of characters. Like, yeah, of course the Indian kid is like he's knows magic.
And has a, you know, heavily accented voice. And
they're, you know, they're being chased by bloodthirsty natives who are gonna kill him, of course. And that would be something you might see more in the original, and in this they turn it on its head. Beginning, they're being chased by natives through the jungle, and then you find out, oh, it was like a test, and they're all friends. So
It's some kind of ritual thing. It is a very like Indiana Jones esque opening, though. It's pretty much straight out of Raiders of the Lost Ark, like more or less. It's exactly like that. But this test they're supposed to do is failed because Haji has a bad feeling about going up to the altar and taking the gem, and Johnny just says, no, fuck you, essentially, I'm gonna go take it. And then there's the ring of fire around them, so you will quickly learn that the lesson of this movie is that Johnny needs to be less headstrong and listen to his teammates and be patient.
And this
get ready
to
hear that a million times.
Yeah,
that never really stops coming up. And
one of the bigger complaints about the movie, it's just like,
certainly.
Like, it's fucking okay. Like, and of course, like half the time, hyperspace broadcasts might boil down to adults complaining about children's shows being children's shows. But
yes, in this in this episode, more than any other, quite possibly.
Yeah.
But I contend that there is a divide between good children's programming and bad children's programming. And when the children's programming smacks you over the head with the moral about 10 times throughout 90 minutes, it's pretty damn annoying.
Yeah.
I mean, ideally, you'd want children's programming like, I don't know, Adventure Time, I guess. I've never really watched it, or Regular Show, which I have watched.
Neither of those shows have really morals, good. Though. They're just entertaining.
That's true.
I guess Adventure Time does a little bit.
I feel like Regular Show might have kind of morals, like don't accidentally unleash some kind of crazy thing halfway through the episode that you then need to fight.
Yeah.
In the last half.
Yeah.
At any rate, the main plot kind of rolls in with a satellite in orbit that opens up in kind of a spider web fashion, and shoots a laser down, which starts really screwing with the world's climate. Or I guess they keep calling it weather, really, but it is... I guess it is weather, technically, yeah. Because it's temporary, but...
Well, it's also... I guess it's also climate, that it's, like, heat, temperatures, you know, stuff like that. Humidity has also changed. It's not just, like, weather effects.
Yeah, sure.
But that satellite, by the way, just kind of looks like it's out of a completely different show.
Yeah, it like does.
Totally
there
sci-fi.
Is... Yeah, and the thing is, this movie really quickly becomes this sort of sci-fi adventure, in a way, which is interesting, but, you know, seeing the opening, I was expecting basically this to just be Indiana Jones with kids, which I wouldn't have necessarily had a problem with.
Yeah.
But, boy, I don't know why I expected that with a title that includes the words cyber insects.
Yeah.
But at any rate, yeah, the satellite starts fucking with weather patterns. Surprise, it's Dr. Zinn, who is way less Fu Manchu than I recall, which was nice. He's kind of just an old man.
He was a fun villain, too. He's very ugly. They really play up, like, the bad look of what it looks like to grow very old. So he's got, like, pockmarks all over his face and, like,
yeah, he's got liver
so
spots.
Many teeth.
And really screwed up teeth and like dark hollowed eyes, kind of. He just looks on death's door. And he has several henchmen who are just numbered. It's, I believe, 425, 426, and 427.
Yeah.
All of whom he kills through the course of the movie.
Yeah, when they fail him.
Yeah, which is classic villain behavior, of course, but also leads one to expect that he has run through 427 henchmen.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he has. He just, like, he's just
yeah,
like,
that's
you
the implication, for sure.
Yeah. Those are, like, my favorite scenes in the movie, too. They're just... Because it's just ridiculous. And every time he says one of the henchmen's names, he takes a long pause between saying 420 and then the name, or then the final
number. Yeah, like the final digit,
As if he, like... can't quite remember which henchman he's on.
Yeah, 427.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's an interesting choice by Jeffrey Tambor, but
still so weird.
Attempting to, and of course you can't really tell. I mean, it's there ish but you know, so attempting to discover why the climate is, or the weather or whatever, is changing, Dr. Quest gets into a space shuttle at the main, like, base of Quest team and launches into space, where apparently there's a space station called Quest Station. And, yeah, you'll realize they say Quest a hell of a lot in this movie. So we're going to say it a lot in this podcast, and if you want a fun drinking game, drink whenever we say Quest, because I'm sure we're going to say it a hell of a lot.
I don't recommend it.
Yeah, that might be pretty bad.
It might be actually lethal.
So, yeah, Quest team is essentially at this point Johnny and Haji, and then, of course, Race Bannon, who's just this kind of adventurer-type guy. And his daughter, Jessie Bannon, who seems to... Well, okay, one thing I'll say about this movie that kind of surprised me is... given the reputation of Johnny Quest as being sort of casually racist and, you know, in general, just sort of old-fashioned. I mean, it was made in the 60s, so...
Sure.
That's to be kind of expected. In all fairness, it's a product of its time.
It's racist in the same way that old adventure serials could be.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, we're dealing with the natives, you know. Like.
Yeah, right. But the point is that this movie, which this was actually produced after The Real Adventures of Johnny Quest, this movie. So just to clear that up from, you know, earlier in the podcast. But... The thing that's interesting is it seems like they are trying pretty hard to lean away from the sort of old-fashioned nature of the original show, which is probably not a bad idea, But it does result in this character, Jesse Bannon, who apparently was not introduced in this movie. She was introduced in the previous movie. But, well, shit, she's in The Real Adventures, I'm pretty sure. But
yeah,
she is not very well written because essentially the whole purpose of her existence is to show up Johnny in like every instance. Yeah. Again,
like, you know, yeah, it's like girls can be cool too. It's like, and sure, that's a good message, but it's like,
oh yeah, no. Don't get me wrong.
Have that be the only character's feature.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's, it comes down to, it's a case of, you know, if you want to write strong female characters, or in general strong characters, strength doesn't come from always being right and always being like perfect. That's still not a strong character. It's a totally flat character. Like,
yeah.
And again, this is complaining about a children's cartoon, yes, but but it does seem a lot of the time like the interactions between some of these characters is, you know, Jesse says something, and then Johnny's like, what do you know? You're a girl. And then she's right. And it's like, alrighty, cool.
We get it.
Yeah. Johnny needs to listen to his teammates. Okay.
She literally hoverboards into the movie. Which is
yeah, that's true.
She's like, yeah!
Oh, boy.
It's like, who the fuck are you?
Well, I mean, I think we'd know if we'd watched any of the other media from this time about Johnny Quest, but yeah, for us, it's kind of like, all right, cool, you're here, neat.
I will say also, on the same note of kind of distancing yourself away from your from the old-fashioned nature of the original, there is a lot of like there's a very diverse set of characters too in terms of like racial diversity,
to an extent, sort of. I mean. The main characters are definitely still all white, with the exception of Haji. And
yeah, it's pretty much all the side characters are, you know.
There's a decent amount of secondary cast that seem to have different backgrounds, who are occasionally a little bit stereotypical, sure, but they're trying, is the point. As far as plot stuff goes, we also have this robot called Fordak who goes with Dr. Quest, and he gets hacked by Zin. Once that happens, Fordak kind of lets Zin capture the Quest space station using his gigantic asteroid fortress.
Yeah.
And then he gives Dr. Quest and Dr. Balazs, who is another character that's, you know, a scientist on Quest Station, sort of a tour around it, indicating that, you know, he has this giant army of cyber insects, and he has some method of producing ethanol from just general like waste product.
Yeah, having the larva consume their waste product and transfer it somehow.
Yeah, and he has these giant, you know, open vats of ethanol, which is amazing because Fordak, the robot, makes a comment of, yeah, it's not safe to store these like this.
Yeah, and maybe you should, like, put a lid on this ethanol vats.
Yeah, maybe.
You shut
so up. So Zin just destroys him and, like, knocks him into one of the vats.
Literally, yeah, throws him into a vat.
For a very simple... I mean, basically, Zin is a classic bad boss villain.
Right.
Anything that's a problem that you raise with him, he's just gonna, I guess, throw you into a vat of ethanol. For
even if you're like a robot that you implanted a virus in, that would be extremely useful because there no Quest information. Nah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you defy Zin, no,
you're thrown into a vat.
You defy it. You give a suggestion on how to improve the workplace. Just fuck you. No, everything's perfect.
I love that too. Like, I believe you referred to it as Chekhov's open ethanol vat.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because of course, if you have an open topped ethanol vat in the first act, you're going to have it explode by the end of the movie, which it does, unsurprisingly. But there's a long way to go to get there, unfortunately. A lot of it taking place on Zen Space Station, which is interesting. I mean, one of the things that's kind of weird about this movie is the design sense of these two sort of competing forces, I guess, Quest Team and Zen, are very different, which is cool. You know, his fortress feels like it's out of something else to an extent, but it actually kind of works for it to separate him from Quest Team, yeah, I would say. One,
and everything, all of his designs are very insectoid at that too, you know, they're
right
from his space station that opens up almost like a spider, which I know is not an insect, but still close enough.
Yeah, sure.
It's arthropod. It's a
bug. Yeah.
You know, to he even like has an escape pod that is like a moth that he gets in a cockpit and flies away in. It's kind of strange. His insects, we might have talked over a little bit about like the cyberization process if he did. I know there's like a little bit of stuff we talked over.
He explains it a little bit. I don't think it's that important. But there is definitely like insect vehicles for sure.
Piloted by insects.
Yeah. Which is awesome, frankly. I mean, so I don't know why you have a problem with that.
I love it, but it's dumb.
Well, if they're like, I don't know.
I mean,
I think it's course, clear the divide between the vehicle and the cyber insect, frankly.
I don't know about that. Like, it just looks like one insect is getting inside of another insect and then driving it around. Although, of course, a favorite is like these mantis soldiers that he has that have laser guns for arms.
Yeah, sure.
So cool.
And I will say that despite the relative failure of our bit at the beginning of the segment, it is crazy how much kind of insect gore they get away with.
Yeah.
Like, they're constantly dismembering and shooting the hell out of these insects. And of course, you know, they bleed green and, you know, they're bugs. So I guess,
yeah,
who cares? But
right.
It is funny to think about, like, damn, they get pretty hardcore with that stuff, which brings us to the Assassinoid, which is Zin's, I guess, ultimate project. He steals some DNA from Quest Station. God, the Quest vocabulary is starting to confuse me somehow. Yeah, Quest Station has this sort of, I guess, Jurassic plant thing where they have all these plants from, you know, prehistoric times that they're regrowing through DNA.
It's like Jurassic Park, but as a garden. It's Jurassic
Park. Yeah, it's the most boring version of Jurassic Park that you can have. But they also have insect DNA, of course. So Zin steals some assassin bug DNA, probably just because it sounds cool.
Yeah.
And proceeds to make these super soldier insects that, when you dismember them or destroy them, their individual parts just grow into full size cyber insects again.
Yeah.
And making them basically like the T-1000, but even more ridiculously indestructible and crazy. Like, I mean, they're like the broom in Fantasia during that sequence. If you destroy it, it just multiplies. And
Assassinoid DNA.
Yeah, God. If only there were more Jurassic Park references in this movie. Like,
or any.
Or, yeah, to be fair, any at all. I mean, I guess
they might do one. Like, one. Like, they restore fucking, they do exactly the Jurassic Park thing. They restore ancient life from amber fossils.
Yeah,
I guess they don't really mix it with other DNA, or they kind of do mix it with the larva of whatever they have, but
yeah, well, and of course the Assassinoid is like a robot kind of somehow, maybe. I don't even know.
Well, yeah, and with the Assassinoids, didn't they bring up like they're like, oh, there's two ways that can be destroyed.
Yeah.
Thermonuclear explosion or frozen with liquid nitrogen.
Yeah, which is weird because the first assassinoid they fight, they freeze with liquid nitrogen and then shatter apart pretty much exactly like the T-1000. And
it doesn't work.
And then it doesn't work at all. So
they just replicate.
So after that, we're told liquid nitrogen, that'll stop them. Yeah. Well, no, it won't. We just saw that. That doesn't make any sense at all.
Guess we've got to nuke space.
Yeah, or a thermonuclear explosion, which, frankly, isn't what blows up the space station in the end. It's ethanol igniting. Like,
yeah, but they are sucked into the void of space, so.
I guess.
I can only hope they can't survive in the vacuum.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. But, it's pretty weird. So, the end of the plot, essentially, is that Zin captures, he's captured Quest and Balazs a while ago, but he sort of hooks their brains up to this weird bio cocoon sort of thing.
He hooks their whole body.
And is then... Yeah, right. And then he's like, downloading them.
Oh,
or uploading them, I guess, into his computer. Yeah, that's the idea.
Really? I thought he was just, like, threatening, just kind of James Bond slow assassination, like, oh, I'm going to slowly have you guys turned into ethanol.
No, I'm pretty sure he's like, draining their brains, basically, which is why they try to put a computer virus into his main system, but they can't because Balazs and Quest are being transferred into it, so they're worried that they're going to kill them if they put in a virus. Race, Jesse, Haji, Johnny all fight their way. They rescue Quest and Balazs. Fordak comes back as a good guy, sacrifices himself heroically, except, of course, he's a robot, so, he's fine, basically. They can just put him in a new body. And then the control of the satellites is given over to Intelligence One, who's this dude in a military uniform who breaks into the movie periodically to say, shit's really going down,
we're running out of time.
Yeah, very frequently. And it is about two sentences of dialogue from him most of the time. He'll show up on a screen, he's like, it's complete chaos. You've got to stop Zin. And they're like, we know. We're going to.
It's snowing
okay,
in the
please.
Tropics.
Yeah, and then turns off the screen.
Yeah, always the abrupt hanging up without saying goodbye that you see in movies.
Yeah, of course.
I do love
so,
that.
Yeah, so he turns he turns one of the satellites around, heats up Zin's space station, which... they escape, the space station explodes, which presumably kills all the assassinoids. And, then they go home.
Oh, Zin escapes on his cool moth.
Yeah, of course. And, of course, intermixed with this is plenty of great adventure shit happening inside the space station, which, is a bunch of detail stuff, frankly. It's cool to look at, I guess. It's fine.
Do you have an example?
Well, I don't know. Like when they open up the hangar to get Quest Station out and all the insects get sucked out the airlock. Like that sort of thing.
Yeah, okay.
Or there's like a couple of action sequences where they're shooting lasers at insects and they're being blown apart and shit.
Yeah, they're getting full-on firefights with these insects.
Like, yeah, pretty much constantly.
They get the entire like Quest Station team to just... go nuts with the guns and start blasting them.
Yeah, it gets pretty intense. Not really, but you know. And of course, they're all firing lasers because normal guns are violent and lasers, I guess, aren't in the classic.
That would be kind of crazy if they just used normal guns, though.
Yeah, no, it would. I mean, that's something I've never understood. Is the idea that laser, I guess because it's fantasy violence, technically, if you're using weapons that don't exist, right? Like, that's why.
Yeah, and it's just faster, sort of. You can just have a laser go through and then have the guy fall over and die. Whereas if you shoot, I guess you can have them fall over and die, like, in a Western or something. But if you're, like, trying to go for action, it's kind of flashier to have a laser, and you can ignore some of the details. If you're going for, like, a more action-packed, like, action scene, having someone blown apart by a gun is like, okay, that's pretty action-packed, but way too violent for kids. Having someone hit by a laser kind of skirts the middle line of flashy enough, but not quite brutally violent.
Well, it might be, I mean, I guess that's true. I think that you can easily have people being shot with guns without, you know, showing them, like, bleeding to death or whatever. Or, you know, getting their heads blown off or whatever the hell. But I think maybe it's just because lasers are more visually stimulating, you know? You can see streaks of lasers going across the screen, where with a gun it's just kind of a muzzle flash, I guess.
Yeah, it might be harder to indicate that the bullet went into this guy, you know?
Yeah, like, I think that makes sense. Opposed to lasers.
It'd be harder to do that as opposed to lasers without having more brutal violence.
Right.
Or having more apparent that someone just got shot.
Yeah, and of course it looks cooler, obviously. I just find it funny because I remember I was watching Zeta Gundam at some point, the English dub, and some genius had the bright idea to make it so that whenever, you know, there's like one episode where they're fighting with machine guns basically on foot, and some guy decided that they should add laser sound effects to the guns firing.
For the dub or for both?
I don't know if it's just for the dub. I haven't watched the original. But
I guess I don't know why they would do that for the dub, though. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, right. It's really strange, and they're obviously not firing lasers either. Like,
that doesn't make sense in the plot. Laser weaponry is like a huge just deal guns. In Gundam.
Yeah, exactly. It's complete nonsense. It's really bizarre.
That's dumb. That's because when I was thinking of like the violent bullet deaths, I'm thinking like the Ghost in the Shell movie is like a lot of those. It's like cyborg people getting ripped apart by machine guns and like very graphically.
Okay, yeah, you don't need to go that far.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of what I'm picturing.
Shit. Like even John Wick is pretty, you know, someone gets shot, they die, there's some blood, but it's not usually extremely graphic.
The second one's just a bit kind crazy, of boom.
Well, I've seen both of them, and neither had a moment where I was like, oh my god, I just saw someone's head get blown off. It's just sort of, oh, that guy's been shot now.
Sure, yeah.
For the most part. I mean, it's no, I guess, Daredevil season 2 dude getting shot in the face with a shotgun, and you see it.
Is that
for
true?
For example.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. But we're way off topic now. So I guess let's get into our final thoughts on this. The plot stuff's more or less resolved, unless you have any detail stuff that you want to bring up.
Final thoughts. Oh. Ballistics were not good enough.
I actually do have one detail thing that I want to bring up, which is that they have a sidekick dog named Bandit, I was annoyed by, I think, in the second scene he was in.
Yeah. When, like, the first minute of the movie, Bandit's really annoying.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, if this happens to the whole movie, I'm going to hate this movie. Because he's basically Scrappy-Doo, but without a voice.
Yeah. He just charges into every situation, despite being powerless to do anything. And it's not quite as awful as Scrappy-Doo. I mean, Scrappy-Doo, to me, is the high watermark of a character that absolutely ruined the dynamic of a show.
Yeah.
But it's still pretty damn annoying.
Yeah, and it's like, you'd think a voiceless Scrappy-Doo would be a lot better, but when all of his voices are replaced with constantly, it's like, ugh, god, stop.
Yeah, for that, I'll just cut in some of the occasional audio of your dog barking in the background.
Yeah. Now, thankfully, though, they stop having him in the movie pretty quickly.
He's in the movie. He just stops doing anything. He's just kind of hanging out on the space shuttle and stuff.
He starts having, like, shitty comic antics.
Yeah. But with that, what did you think of this movie?
It was all right. Like, it's not fantastic. It's not great. It's not. I wouldn't watch it again.
Yeah, no, neither would I.
But it's not bad or terrible. It's just like, it's there. It's a thing. I guess if you're a real big fan of Johnny Quest, want to revisit it, maybe it's worth revisiting, but I really couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
All I can say is it's middle of the road.
Yeah, I feel more or less the same way. I was surprised by how much I enjoyed it in some manners. But there are things in it that are really goddamn annoying. Like, the whole moral thing being bashed over the head with it is frustrating. And again, yes, it's a children's cartoon. But,
Kildren's cartoon.
Yeah. It is a children's cartoon, but at the same time, I feel like I have seen many children's cartoons that are not quite so ham-fisted with what their morals are. I mean, this movie is literally, you know, it's not, okay, let's show Johnny not listening to his teammates and then, you know, fucking up. Which, to be fair, it does, but it also has a lot of Dr. Quest and Race Bannon being like, now, Johnny, you have to be patient. You have to listen to your friends. And it's just, you get it immediately. Yeah, A kid would get it. It doesn't need to rub it in as much as it does. Of course, this eventually results in a scene where Johnny is basically pouting because he finally realizes what a fuck-up he is, which thankfully only lasts one scene. But again...
Yeah, I hated that too. It's just like, I don't care for this kid's angst. Like, it's so... Just end it.
Yeah, and it's weird because I can't really put my finger on what it is about that scene that's frustrating, but like a loss of confidence in your ability is a pretty standard thing in this kind of movie.
Sure.
And usually I don't mind it, but for some reason here, as soon as it started, I was just like, no, please, I don't want to see Johnny whine for the next two scenes.
Yeah, maybe that's the thing. It's like he's whining, and he's got a whiny tone to his voice, and it's just like, no, come on, please.
And just in general, he's pretty annoying. I mean,
yeah.
On the scale of visit, revisit, or bury forever and never watch ever again, I think, to be honest, I would put it in the last category. I don't think this is worth watching.
Bury this.
Yeah. It's not absolutely atrocious, which is part of the problem. You know, if it was like laughably bad, then it might be like kind of funny to watch.
Yeah.
But it's just sort of okay. And there's definitely parts of it that are entertaining. I mean, I thought Zin in general was pretty entertaining. But of course I did, because he's the villain. And the actual hero characters are pretty boring.
Yeah, everyone else is boring as hell.
So yeah, I guess...
I'd give a conditional revisit, but maybe just bury.
Yeah.
I can't quite say one way or the other, but it didn't like offend me or anything.
Yeah, but, right. You know,
whatever. Like,
no, it's just an average thing that exists. It didn't cause me to roll my eyes. Yeah, yeah, sure.
I'm glad we got out of the way so we could start watching Reboot.
Right, and I'm glad that we finally dipped our toe into Johnny Quest that when we watch The Real Adventures, I guess I'll have any context whatsoever for it.
Yeah.
Other than laughably bad CGI.
Yeah, other than actually worse than Reboot CG. The Real Adventures of Johnny Quest has some rough CG.
Yeah, it does.
I've said it before. I thought it was like the peak. I thought it was so good.
You've said it before this episode.
That's right. That's right, I did. Sometimes I lose track.
Yeah. Anyway, I think unless you have any final thoughts on Johnny Quest v. Cyber Insects.
Dawn of Justice. No. Yeah. No. Get a body bag for this piece of shit. Isn't that Nota Fossick quote?
Yeah, yeah. It's, no, it's a trash bag. It's a garbage bag. Get a garbage bag for these pieces of shit. That's the Nota Fossick quote. We need to actually watch that movie at some point.
Do we? I don't know if we do.
Yes. Anyway, this has been Hyperspace Broadcasts. I am Michael Doak.
I am Peter Eby.
You should revisit us next week when we tackle Reboot. Some acknowledgements. Bumpers were taken from the videos Johnny Quest vs. the Cyber Insects, uploaded by Warner Brothers Home Entertainment and Ultimatum of Zen from Johnny Quest vs. the Cyber Insects, uploaded by Awareness Bringer, both on YouTube. The opening and closing music is Vapor Diving by Onatech, as always, off the album Onatech Instrumentals Volume 6. You can find more of their music on SoundCloud, and you should, because it's pretty awesome. Rights were secured through Jamendo.